listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hollywood, this is your host of the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this episode of Wake Up Hollywood. We have guitar phenomenon singer-songwriter Cameron Morgan. How are you, Cameron?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on this show. Crazy that you're getting me on this thing. Get me out of the woodwork here, man, the lab.
I love it. I'm seeing the wall of sound behind you. Which one of these amps is your favorite behind you? Just this is a guitar nerd question. Which I see a bunch of Bogners. Which one is your favorite on that back wall right there?
Probably this AC30, the trapezoid. That's probably because I can get anything I need from that one amp.
So is it a vintage amp?
It's a 64, 65. Oh, wow. It's an AC30. So yeah, it's got the chime and the clean, and then you can get the amazing gain and everything you'd ever need from a cranked Marshall, you know.
I have an AC30, and I got to tell you, it's one of the most brittle amps I've ever owned, and it's like it just camps in my rehearsal space until I need to bring it out for a session where I want an amp, like amps in stereo. But when you have them in stereo, I love my favorite guitar tone. If I can have it in every session, I would be a Fender Twin Reverb and a Vox AC30 in stereo. Mm-hmm. I think it's my favorite guitar sound. But anytime I think about moving that Vox AC30, I'm like, oh, that's going to probably cost me some repair. That, you know, just it's just so brittle. So tell me if you know what the cure is for that.
Well, the thing with the AC30s, they're so – you have to make sure that the bias is correct. And it's not an amp that I would take out and play gigs with.
No.
It's a fussy thing. No, it's not the amp you take out to play unless right. You're Brian May and you've got six of them ready to go.
Right. Mm-hmm. And what are the amp you're talking about? Are they like Blue Al Nico speakers? What are the speakers?
Well, I'm running different cabs, so I do like the Blue Al Nico Celestion. I do like that speaker a lot.
And that's then what I have in my AC30. That's what I'm
saying. The magic speaker for me is a 65 watt Creamback.
Ooh, very nice.
Yeah, it's much. I like that more than the 75 watt Creamback.
All right. Well, let's put the guitar nerding.
Yeah, question. Everybody's already left the video and done. They're like,
these two. No, let's get back to this interview. So. Where did you grow up, and what was the moment of Zen that made you know that you wanted to become a musician or a guitar player or both? Was it a song you heard? Was it somebody giving you a guitar for the first time? When did you start playing guitar? Here we go. Let's do it.
All right. Well, I'm from Houston, Texas, and I started playing guitar because my mom played guitar.
Oh, that's awesome.
And she... my entry into music was Joni Mitchell and Neil Young. So she was playing those songs. And that's how I learned how to play, is those songs. And that was my very, very, very beginning, was kind of like strumming every Neil Young song and Joni songs and figuring out how to do the tunings. And, you know,
a songwriter. Is that right?
What? No.
Was your mom a songwriter? Because those are all songwriter.
She was a strummer, you know, okay. And she would sing. And that's my early. And then I graduated to, like everybody else, your classic, you know, rock, Cream, Clapton, Jeff Beck, Hendrix, the whole thing like that. And then all the Texas guitar heroes I grew up with. So when I was a little kid, I got to see Stevie Ray Vaughan and Eric Johnson, I've seen Eric Johnson like 18 times, you know.
So I just read a little blurb that he used to open for Stevie Ray Vaughan. Yeah. Is that how you saw him?
No, that was just random club days. You could see him every – he would be in Houston, like, it seemed like every month.
That's crazy.
So, you know, so those guys, Billy Gibbons was big. Jimmy Vaughn was big. Actually, I knew of Jimmy Vaughn before C. Ray Vaughn. As a kid, I knew about the Fabulous Thunderbirds. So that was like, that was a big deal because I could pick that stuff up. You know, you could learn it, and like any kind of ZZ Top, you could learn, you know, pick that stuff up.
It's all riff based.
Right.
But tell me the moment and where were you and how old were you when you saw Stevie Ray Vaughan?
I was probably 12.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you still remember like what that experience was like? Because I'm so envious. I never got to see.
Yeah.
On. He's the one guy I really wish I saw. He's my favorite guitar player.
And then I saw him early in a club, and then I saw him later with Jeff Beck.
Wow.
On that tour, and then I saw him again opening for The Who.
What?
Yeah.
So you saw him three different times?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite Stevie Ray Vaughan show that you saw that just
probably the one with Jeff Beck.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's two of the greatest guitar shredders ever. Yeah. I've seen Jeff Beck a couple times, but Stevie Ray Vaughan was on a whole different level for me just because, like, he hit all the things for me. You know what I mean? So were you into Texas blues just at that time? Were you into any of that stuff, like, playing-wise?
Yeah, that was part of my roots. I did all that. I played a lot of bar bands. I was playing bar bands and dive bars at, like, 11, 12 years old.
Wow.
So
you're like a prodigy. When did you start playing guitar?
Like six.
Wow.
Six, that, seven, something like that.
Yeah. So you were already pretty well versed by the time you were in middle school. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Something like that.
And you probably had to wait outside for all the clubs, right? Because you weren't of age. And then you got brought in by a parent, and then you started jamming.
Pretty much.
You kind of get the rush. Like, you were like, okay, this is what I want to do forever. Like, at that age, you knew what you wanted to do.
Without a doubt, it was all I ever wanted to do.
Wow.
No question about it. There was no other ifs, ands, or buts of anything.
And was it like the crowd? Was it like just the fact that you were playing live? Was it like playing with other people? Was it all of it? What was the specific feeling, the rush of it?
It's just like, I just love to play. It's nothing about a crowd or being famous. It's just, it's therapy, you know, or it just made me happy. That's just, it's, you know, you find your thing and then that's what you like. And that was it.
You know, it's funny. I always tell people, like, my favorite musical moments are 90% of them are when nobody's around, when I'm just in my room kind of discovering something or playing. So you hit it right on the head. It's like, yeah, it's not about the crowd. It's not about any of that, but it's like, it's just the joy of playing. But there is an electricity that you feel when you play live that I feel like is like an adrenaline boost right away. It's like a drug, you know what I mean? So I think there's something about that, but I always feel like when nobody's around, when nobody's listening, that's when I tend to be the most tapped into whatever that source is. So I'm sure you have moments like that. Tell me kind of like what are the things that you practice? This is another guitar nerd question for me. Are you learning songs and playing techniques? Are you playing modes? Are you playing scales? Are you learning solos constantly? Tell me like how you
mean practice. Today? You mean today?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like how you practice, yeah, on a daily regimen.
Now it's just I'm always trying to write. Since I have limited time now, I just, whatever time I have, I'm working on writing, composing songs, and I'm always working on sound. So that takes a big chunk, you know, and I always experiment in alternate tunings a lot too. Cause that,
like open blues or like dadgad or like what are the tunings?
You know, I mean, like I use all kind of weird tunings, just to like open up and get out of any kind of conventional chord shapes and things. So I do that. And then I also, for technique, I practice, I'm always practicing bebop. I'm always trying to push the envelope of how up-tempo bebop, that kind of thing. Is just playing changes, weaving in and out of changes is kind of like, it keeps the mind, you know, keep growing that way.
Yeah.
That's a lifelong thing. Just being I just want to be like a great improviser and not just be able to play. You throw anything at me and then I can just weave through it, you know?
Bebop, it's like one of my favorite eras of jazz. And it's like, whenever I listen to it, it's such a masterful thing when you hear people soloing over bebop. So I love that you chose that. And what specific tunings, like, do you kind of like gravitate towards the most? Are they kind of like singer-songwriter? Like, I use Dadgad a lot. There's one that I use, the Nick Drake tuning. I think it's D-A-D-G-C-F-sharp. I think that's what it is, right?
Yeah, so what I've done is I have a guitar that I've been playing for about since 98, 99, and it stores 300 tunings in it. So
what?
Yeah. Here, I'll show it to you.
I think was this the one that you brought to NAMM? I think I remember you showing me this at NAMM.
Yeah, so if you see this this little, that's the tuning. And here's the, it has a screen here where I have six tunings on every bank. So then you see these motors here?
Yep.
Okay, so when you hit a tuning, the motors shift up and down. So it's not a digital guitar. It's an analog guitar. It's digitally controlled, you know, where the motors are moving.
So it's detuning, or, you know, kind of like moving the strings around?
You can, go as high as a G on the high E without it breaking.
Wow.
And then you can go on your low E string. You can go down to like an A, or, you know, like a B where it's floppy. So I have tuning. I have a tuning that I've, do is like B A A A A B, you know.
Wow.
And then there's also like the Crosby, Stills, Nash tuning, the Sweet Judy, Blue Eyes. I think it's like E E E E B E, that one, you know. So like those tunings, right now, so it's already in that tuning. That's in a different tuning, you know.
Right.
But
so you use that to write mostly, like write songs.
Yeah, I use it to write and play, and I try to improvise in the weird tunings too, you know.
Wow. That's crazy.
So I'm doing a residency gig here in Portland. We're playing the new songs off the record, and they're in different tunings. So I'm soloing in those tunings.
Wow.
I'm
gonna ask another guitar nerd question. Like what? Like
everybody's done watching now.
No. They're still on. No, I mean, this is like a question for me. It's like, you know, I always get used to patterns when I'm soloing in standard. And when I go to another tuning, it's like a little bit of an adjustment. Like I'm always like, oh yeah, I forgot I'm in this tuning. So like one string or two strings or three strings are in different, you know, than standard. Like how is that adjustment for you? Are you just doing the math constantly, like knowing what tuning you're in, or are you just using your ear?
No. It's just I try it, like any students I've ever had in the past, it's always I'm against any patterns.
Okay.
So you just have to figure out if guitar is tuned in fourths, E-A-D, right? So maybe when you're in your open tuning, figure out, oh, well, which strings are fifths, which ones are fours, you know, and then that can kind of maybe help you, but.
Oh, that's good. You're just basically like mapping the guitar. Yeah. I like that. That's cool.
Like maybe map those two groupings of strings, and then you can play all the things that you already know how to play.
Right.
Up and down. You know, force you to play up and down, and then, but then just use your ear, you know, kind of thing. Cause then you're going to play different. Like another trick is I have a friend that plays, he's left-handed, and I pick up his guitar. Try playing a left-handed guitar. You'll start coming up with some hip stuff that you would never play in standard tuning.
Well, it's also interesting because I'm wearing the shirt right now. I'm wearing an Eric Gale shirt.
There you go.
And he does that. And like, so I noticed a lot of his soloing licks.
That's right.
He'll do because it's a right-handed guitar upside down. And he kind of like figures out what works in those like positions. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that's smart. All right. So you're 12 years old. You're playing clubs. Right. You're ready to drop out of high school. Just kidding. So then when did you know, okay, this is it. Were you in a band? Were you kind of touring? Did you start playing just the same kind of local dives with the same bands? Or were you playing with different bands? Tell me what that life was like.
Yeah, high school. I had a regular band through high school. We put out the 4-track cassette.
Nice.
In those days, you know, so that was, you know, we sold that at the local stores. You know, we played all the, in Houston at that time, you would play Fitzgerald's and, you know, these, you know, you play the regular things. We might do a couple things kind of outside of Houston, but nothing really that big. Yeah, and then I basically went, you know, out of high school, I went to college. I went to North Texas, and so
where Don Henley went, where Adam Gust, my drummer,
right.
And Adam, I was like, I texted Adam. I said, "Hey, man, Cameron's going to be my guest tonight." He's like, "Tell that guy I've texted him 3 times. He hasn't responded." I said, "I know he's busy with the pedals, man." He's like, "But tell him I said hello." I said, "I will." So I'm passing on the message, and it's on tape, so he knows.
All right, I'll get back.
All right. So you went to University of North Texas, and Did you kind of like, obviously at music school, I'm sure you went through the same thing that I did. All of a sudden the players are elevated, all the musicians are elevated. Tell me what that experience was like for you once you got to college.
Got my ass kicked many times over.
Right.
So yeah, it was a good ass kicking. And
did it force you to like practice longer, more focused practice?
Yeah, that's what it does.
It's like you realize, man, a lot of people have been taking this a lot more serious than I have. That's exactly what I felt. It was like, man, I thought I was taking this serious.
Right.
No, not at all. Now I need to take it a lot more serious. So it's kind of reflected in that. So were you jamming with a lot of cats in bands, or were you kind of like, did you kind of like start a new band in college? Tell me like what happened then.
Well, at that time I was immersed in just being the best player and doing jazz. So I did a lot of jazz gigs. I played a lot of top 40, played just every type of gig you can get just to get experience. That's just kind of like gigging all the time. It was just more like how much experience can one get? And when you're in Dallas, Fort Worth, that's a big area to hit. A lot of, you know, opportunities to play. So I just look at that time as like a growth opportunity. I did have like a rockabilly kind of blues Texas thing that played out a lot.
Okay.
During that time.
I don't think I've ever asked you this, but who are some of your favorite jazz guitarists?
My all-time favorites are George Benson.
Oh, he's one. I just saw him for the first time.
Oh, wow.
I love George Benson. He's like my dude, man. Yeah.
He's the dude.
Yeah, he is.
Wes Montgomery's the guy.
He's no longer
Worth. Yeah. Those are.
What about Grant Green? Do you know Grant Green? He's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Yeah. Barney Kessel. I love Barney Kessel too. Yep.
They're all great.
Yep. That's awesome. Okay. So then you're starting to like immerse yourself in jazz. You're doing rockabilly.
Mm-hmm.
And then were you writing songs at that time?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you were always writing songs.
Yeah. Always.
Okay.
Since 12, you know, 12 years old.
And you were also doing session work at that time, right? Like as a guitarist.
I did a few sessions in Dallas-Fort Worth, you know, till that time. And then I left. I was teaching at about 50 students a week. And then I left I moved to New York to like do that thing.
And how was that thing? I know that's a grind. Tell me what that was like. Because that a lot of people don't realize how hard it is to make it as a musician in the big city, and New York really is the big city. Tell me what that was like for you.
I'd say it was amazing for just another kick in the butt, you know, another talent, you know, like, oh, these guys are, it's still like the Mecca to me of, you know, there aren't many Meccas of supreme talent, and it's one of them.
I would agree. I would agree, especially for jazz. For jazz, especially, but for all styles.
But even like a singer songwriter. So I was playing I had a regular thing, so I was doing regular, and I was busking. I would busk.
Wow.
Every day, I'd go to Times Square, and busk. I'd busk in the subways.
That's awesome.
I was doing it, you know. So, just trying to get as much experience as possible.
Would you bring like a rig with you, or would you do it acoustic?
Man, I hate to tell you what I was bringing. It's so embarrassing. I was hauling a Mesa Boogie Nomad combo amp on a dolly with, you know, just all over that was the most stupidest thing ever.
Crazy.
Yes. And then hauling it up, you know, four flights of,
that's
of a walk-up.
Dude. You're like, that is the guitar player's search for tone right there. It's like, I cannot be in a subway playing a PV amp, you know, a practice rig or something like that. That's hilarious. But that, you know what? That's also, I respect it because that's your attention to detail.
Well, then there was a, you had the crate powered amps too as well. So,
right.
You know, that was what, that was the popular little amp that everybody would take around. And they had a little mouse amp. It sounded like crap, you know.
And what did you, were you singing too? Or were you just playing guitar?
Yeah, I would sing, I'd sing too.
So
yeah.
You'd bring another amp for a mic?
No, I would just sing, just built without a mic.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dude, that's crazy. That's really commendable. All right. So that, now are you meeting cats? Like, now, you know, let me preface this. You just did an amazing record with Brian Blade and Tim LaFay. Brian Blade's like one of the most premier jazz drummers and drummers in the country. And Tim LaFay is one of the most premier bassists. I've also done some work with Tim. But dude, that, both those cats are intensely awesome. Did you meet them in New York for the first time?
I met Tim at the Time Out Cafe in probably 1998-99. He was playing with somebody after me. I was playing with a singer-songwriter named Greta Gertler, and then he played after. And
was, so was he with Wayne Krantz then? Was that when he was playing with Wayne Krantz or somebody else?
Yeah, it was that time. Okay. I'd go see him play with Wayne many times.
Wow, that's crazy. He's one of my favorite guitarists too. He's a badass. Totally. So, and then what about Brian? How did you meet Brian?
That's a whole different interesting story. I got a call out of the blue, probably like 2010. And I was at the Nashville NAMM show and he called me and it was a Sunday and he said, "Hey, you want to get together tomorrow and play?" And I was literally flying back and we went to breakfast and we played and that's when we met. And then we
crazy.
It was super random. Just kind of unbelievable. Wow. He's one of my all time favorite.
Yeah. He's the baddest of the bad in that world, especially. And you know what? Like, it's like having somebody that you study and we're listening. You're probably listening to him, you know, in music school. I have no doubt.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And then he gives you the call. You're like, "Hey man, you want to jam?" You're like, "Yeah, whatever my schedule is, I'm going to clear it because you're calling." But in this time after, before you actually did this record with Brian, you did some recordings and performances with members of Prince. Who did you play with members of Prince and who did you play with members of Led Zeppelin? Let's talk about those two things. Those are two pinnacle, huge bands and artists, right?
Yeah, well, those things are just like where you play with members of the group. You know, I played with Josh and Cora with Prince. I did a session for them.
Wow.
And then with... I played with Tony Franklin from The Firm and Jason Bonham. We had a group. Jason came down to play one time. So that was a group I did in LA for a while. That was a pretty group. We were playing a lot, trying to get a deal. And,
wow.
You know, so.
So, okay. So now you've been writing songs this whole time, correct?
Yeah.
Were you putting out records at the same time? Or were you not putting out records like you were playing on session?
I only have like two vocal records out and then a few other records with no vocals. But I mean, I have so much music stash and, you know, songs and it's, you know, endless.
You got to put it out there, man. Like, you know, one thing I always find with artists, it's like they're always so prolific and then they keep it on their hard drive and the whole world doesn't even know that they've got all this music that's just like sitting on the hard drive. Like, you got to release that stuff. Just throw it out there because you never know what's going to hit and you never know, like, obviously you want it to be finished. So if things aren't finished, then I understand that. But even still, it's like, man, this is what I tell, you know, other artists. It's like, once you write a song, it's no longer yours. You got to like put it out for the world to kind of embrace because it's now the world's, you know what I mean? So, but I mean, I'm sure you have albums and albums of music that you have not, you know, released. Please release those because you are a badass musician and we'd love to hear it. But let's play something from your new record. What do you want to play us first?
Well, since you started on what my influences were and all those things, maybe if you started with the Cousin Joe song, that kind of hits on kind of my early influences. If you want to maybe go start from the beginning to have like a blues kind of rocker number.
Okay.
You know, but the thing about the record and the thing about how I write music is that every song on the new record could be a different artist or it's like a different style of music, every song. So when we were, you know, recording it, you know, I asked Brian and Tim, I was playing them songs, you know, hey, do you like this? Do you like this? And we started out making like a jazz record, and it just wasn't like, I wasn't feeling it. So I said, hey, you like this? You like, and they were liking the more vocal things more. And I'm like, okay, great. And so it ended up, I'd started writing songs the day of the session, and we would track it and mix it, rough mix it in the day, in the same day. So
half of the
new record I wrote in the studio.
That's crazy. That's
while we were there. Yeah, it was, well, I was inspired because I had these guys playing, and right. I was like, after playing with them in the room, I kind of like started, I could do this with these guys. And so the next morning I would get up early and try to do two or three songs, and then we would cut maybe one or two each day.
Wow. I mean, that's like the old school way to do it too.
Yeah. And you're live in the room, and no song got more than two or three takes. I mean, they were done.
Crazy, dude.
No more than two or three takes.
That is what, like, I'll tell you, like, for me, I always have to road test songs for me. I always have to like rehearse them and listen to the rehearsals. I will actually rehearse the band for 6 months before we walk into the studio, only because I got to know like where, like what is the trajectory of a song. But I always love when artists do exactly what you're doing, because there's a live energy when something comes about and it's just being birthed, that it has an energy and a vibe and a magic to it that you sometimes don't always get when you play something rehearsed and something that's kind of like regurgitated over and over. You know what I mean? It's like,
you want to play one of those songs that we did that I'm talking about where I wrote it that morning. And
yeah, let's play one of those first. Which one is that?
The Other Side.
Okay. All right. Here's The Other Side by Cameron Morgan.
Get on.
Very cool, man. That's Groovalicious, man. Mm-hmm. It kind of has like some Beck influences. I like the slapback delay on the vocals. Tell me a little bit about the process and how it all came together.
Well, that was the one that I wrote the morning that we tracked it.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Two takes, maybe one, two.
And what were you thinking like when you kind of jamming and kind of like making up gibberish lyrics? Or like how did you kind of like...
I think, yeah, that was just like, you know, that started as a gibberish and then just built it from there. And then I had Brian and Tim and Alex, I had them sing those backgrounds, you know?
I heard it. It was very cool.
So it's fun to do that. And then Tim's doing all the crazy sound design on the synths. He was having fun.
It's very much like Beck Sea Change. It's got like that, like those elements, that Nigel Goodrich thing. Cool. I loved it. It's very cool. Very like, man, and I love that you have this like outro change that just completely changes the dimension of the song. Tell me, like, was that kind of a planned thing in as you were putting together, or was it just like you guys hit that change and like lightning kind of went off?
No, I just wrote it that way as kind of an outro. It was kind of like we had a Mellotron going. It was kind of like feeling like a Genesis song, like an early Genesis kind of thing. And then it just had that feeling. And then, but the lyric is, you know, like the whole vibe, I'm calling the record's called Love Everybody. So the lyric in the outro line is call your family and your friends. It doesn't matter where you've been. So it was more like a, you know, like a sentimental kind of thing. Like we only have so much time. Let's call our peoples and tell them how we feel kind of thing.
So the song Getting On,
it's basically the lyric is like, yeah, we're getting on, we're getting older. So make the best of what we got. So that's what the song was about. So maybe subconsciously I had Marvin Gaye, or going through my head, you know, but that's what it was.
Yeah. I love that too. And it's like, you know, that's something that's a sentiment that's like always in my head, no matter what I'm doing. It's like, I think as a creator, you can get like lost in your creations, you know what I mean? And you forget sometimes how to tap into the people that love you and want to kind of like connect with you. So I love that that's like a theme, because I definitely am guilty of that. Like I can almost like be tucked in like, oh, wait, what? Oh yeah. Hello everybody. Because it's just like part of like creation, you know, it's like when you get into it, you're like so into it that it's hard to kind of keep track of how you're communicating to others. So yeah, man, guilty as charged, bro. Guilty as charged. All right, let's play something else. But okay. Tell me a little bit about, you said it's called Cousin Joe?
Yeah, Cousin Joe is like a Guitar Hero song, you know, like a blues rock, total Texas blues rock kind of Guitar Hero song. And yeah.
Did you kind of set out to have one of those in the
No. But the song is about my cousin Joe, who is from Texas.
Okay.
So the lyric is very true, you know. He hasn't even heard it yet, so I haven't played it. He hasn't heard it yet.
Well, Cousin Joe, if you're listening.
Cousin Joe is not going to like the song.
Cousin Joe, you may not want to be cousins with Cameron after this song. But let's play it. Here's Cousin Joe by Cameron Morgan.
is feeling well. He says he is a lover man, a pimp with a razor in his hand.
So sick, bro. So sick. I was making stinky guitar faces the whole time. Dude, first of all, your solo on that is incredible, dude. Was that just like one full take that you were just like feeling it? Man, that is a colorful and badass solo, dude. You do textures and then it's like you're just throwing darts, man. It's just like crazy. Really, really tasteful solo, explosive. In all the right ways, but super artistic, musical, melodic, just really, that was dope. The whole song really has moments. Who's playing keys on that?
That's his name is Alex Milstead. He lives here in Portland.
Killing. So that, great solo too there.
That take was all live. That was all wow. The take.
That was crazy.
His take went, and then my take came after his. It was all one take.
He soloed and then you soloed all same take. Wow.
Yeah. Live in the room.
Just feels seamless and you can see why. Let's switch gears a little bit because I also want to, you know, introduce people to the fact that you're creating guitar pedals.
Yeah.
You're taking guitar nerding to new heights, bro.
Yeah.
I love it. You've been developing some pedals. And just remind me one more time the name of the company.
Zasha Booty. Z-A-S-H-A-B-U-T-I.
I almost called it Zambashti, but I was like, no, that's not it. I'm going to let him introduce. One more time, explain what
Zasha
it is.
Zasha Booty.
Tell me the significance of the name.
It's just a made-up name, so you can find it on a search engine.
That's cool. I like that, dude.
I just made up. It's a name that doesn't exist, so it's like Sasudio. So, you know, I love Fela Kuti. So booty is like cootie.
Okay. All right.
And so Zasha with Fela Kuti changed to booty, B-U-T-I. So Zasha Booty.
Where's the Zasha from?
I don't know.
That's your Eastern European influence. Right.
I'm Zasha, man. Zasha. Yeah.
I love it. So you just released a new guitar pedal, or are you just about to release a new guitar pedal?
Correct? Let's just say it's getting released this week, and I've shipped the pre-orders, but it literally is dropping yesterday, you know.
And explain a little bit about it, because it's super cool. We were talking on the phone about it, but I want our listeners to...
This is what it looks like.
Yeah, Zamp, baby. Very cool.
It's a sparkly gold brick of...
Wait, let me see the pedal one more time. Just hold it up there for a second. So it's got gain and then output. Okay, cool. Yeah.
It's as simple as you could possibly get. It's basically the beautiful cleans to... You just keep adding a little bit more hair. You know, you get that perfect tube-overdriven, you know, amp. But it's not... a pedal, it's an amplifier. This is a true amplifier.
Right.
This is a, you know, it's based on a Tweed Deluxe that we had, that I had a 59. Everything down to the tubes, compression sag, everything that how tubes respond when they're pushed and not. But this is, I believe, the world's first analog recreation of an amplifier, you know, of like, you know, there's digital modeling that does different amps, but this is truly analog. So when you play it, it feels like an amp, and it's meant to be like my whole ideas like, well, I want to do fly dates and I want to travel, so I can just have pedals, amps, since we can do amps in a box, you know, multiple amp circuits now, we can create anything now and have it on a tiny board and plug in. We don't have to depend on a great backline for a gig, and we can go direct into the house. And I've already done 5 gigs with this thing, and the sound men have come up to me and go, what's going on here?
Wow. That's amazing. You're going indirect. That's why, right?
Well, no, like I brought in a 8-inch QSC powered monitor and had a mic it. And they're like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, yeah, they wouldn't do it. I was like, just mic it, you know? Right. And they're like, they couldn't believe that you could get a tube amplifier tone out of a active, normally a horrible sounding speaker.
Well, let's play a little clip. This is Cameron playing some Rolling Stones riffs using this pedal. Here we go.
Okay.
That sounds great. It's so even keel in all those frequencies too, man. Like highs, lows, everything's really well balanced, man. That sounds beautiful, dude.
That is basically a Tweed Deluxe cranked. I mean, that is like when that thing is dimed and, you know, it's.
What are you going through? Are you just going through a PA speaker there? Or
check this out. So what you're hearing there are 2 tiny computer speakers.
What?
Yeah. That is.
What, can you go through an amp with that?
Or yeah. No, it's meant to go through an amp or
wow.
go in your DAW or whatever. But as I'm playing, you see the circuit behind me. And so it's literally just going into to the computer with the 2 little speakers, the little tower speakers or whatever.
You sold me, bro. I'm going to be buying one of those pretty soon, dude. Well, okay. So where can people get it and how can people get it?
We're doing a pre-introductory 179 at zashabuti.com.
And it's zashabuti.com.
Buti, yeah.
Okay, cool. I want to play one more song because we're running out of time. I just want to make sure we get all the songs in. Okay. What's the last song you want to play us?
Well, there's 2. I mean, you know, if you wanted, one is super rock. And then the other one is more kind of contemplative. Do that one. That one might. It's whatever you want to do. But
which one's the ZZ Top one? That's the rock one, right?
You just played it. You just played the more kind of. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so which one do you want to play of the last two?
Well, it's more like, do you want to go to like a lyric driven contemplative kind of thing that's got a vibe, or the other one could be like a rocker kind of thing.
If you were to take one of these songs to an island, which one would you take?
I'd probably do the Wahoos. Just do Wahoo. Do that one.
All right, here's Wahoo by Cameron Morgan.
Thank you.
Dude, that was great. And let me tell you, in that time that that song was playing, I just bought the Zamp pedal, too. You got to sign it. You got to sign it like I asked you to on the phone. You got to sign it somewhere on the pedal. But, yeah, man, that pedal is awesome. That song is so, so good. It's like almost like kind of like hypnotic, kind of like meditative. Tell me what the vibe behind or the inspiration behind it.
Yeah, it's meant to be like a meditative, like going into nature and the moon and the going on the hikes, basically. So I was channeling as if I was going on long hikes in the moon and in the forest. Like that was the vibe, you know. And then Wahoo is just it's a made up word. Like I was thinking Hawaii as if I'm in Hawaii and I'm going on a hike, and it's just beautiful nature, and you know, it's the whole thing is meditative. That was the idea.
I like it. It just takes you to that place. And honestly, while I was on the Zasha Booty side, I was like, oh, this is very hypnotic, and it's taking me to the purchase pedal that makes you I'm like, this music is adding to the hypnotic powers of me just like giving you my money, dude. Just like, no, you know what? I know you have an immense attention to detail in your musicianship. A lot of people don't know. Well, they do know, but a lot of people should know that you also play the all the solo fills on Someone Tell the World It's Burning off my new blues record, which you did with one of your pedals as well that is yet to be released, which I will be buying as well, that I've been pestering you about. But you are just such a killer guitarist, killer musician, killer songwriter. Tell me where people can find your music and find you online.
cmosounds.com.
Spell it out because people are dumb.
cmosounds. So I'm Cameron Morgan, so it's cmosounds.com.
And where can people find you on Instagram too?
It's at cmosounds. Same thing.
Cameron, we're going to have to do a show together in LA when you bring the band out here, dude. And you know what? You have an open invitation to come back. The whole point of this is to follow up with artists like yourself every 9 or 10 months. So
I would be honored to do that.
You know? Yeah, man. Yeah, man. Dude, and we have a lot more guitar nerding to talk about. So I look forward to it. And I look forward to you signing my guitar pedal. And
thank you. Real quick.
Like a Hollywood. Yeah.
Real quick. I have some limited edition special Zamps. I have a titanium. The titanium with black and pink.
Well, that's cool.
And then this is the you know, the standard model. And then this one's kind of a limited two. So which one would you like?
What's the limited two? What's that one?
This is just a different font. This is vibrating, and this is like classic font.
I like that one right there. That one that you're holding right there.
You want one of these?
I want one of those. That one right there. I want you to sign it.
Okay.
All right. Awesome. Cameron, you are a badass in and out. You're innovating gear, and you're innovating sounds, and you're innovating songs and the creation process. Keep at it, dude. The world needs more people like you, and there aren't going to be more people like you because you stand alone in your own world of categories when it comes to all of this. So keep doing it. Keep hustling, man. You are a badass, and we look forward to having you back on the show. Okay, man?
Really appreciate you having me and getting
likewise. Yeah, man. Thank you for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood. On behalf of Cameron, myself, and Sam, we'll see you guys next week. Hang in there. I know times are tough, but you know what? Happy holidays. Make the most of things. And check out Zasha Booty. Check out the Zamp. Check out Cameron Morgan's music. We'll see you guys next week. Peace and love.
Listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.